Hey everybody, it's Sunny. If you are listening to this, you're listening on the iTunes feed. Go sign up at the Patreon. You'll be able to actually listen to the Equalizer 3 review in this episode, which I had to trim because we didn't do a bonus episode. Can't give it away for free. People pay for this. So anyway, go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. You'll easily find it. It's a great show. You'll love it. We do lots of cool things. Go sign up.
You should stay out of other people's business.
Whatever it is you and your friends do, do it somewhere else.
You warning me?
I'm preparing you.
Welcome to the Subbeacon Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike Warren. Joining me, as always, are my two co-hosts, who just want to find some peace in a picturesque village on the Amalfi Coast, Jonathan V. Last and Sunny Bunch. Join us over at subbeacon.com, where you can become a patron. Get first access to our episodes every Friday. Get exclusive access to the occasional bonus episodes on Mondays. Comment, vote in polls. Become a part of the Subbeacon community. You'll be glad you did at subbeacon.com. We're going to be talking about the Equalizer 3, Threequalizer, later in the show. But first, we want to see how everyone's doing. JVL, what is going on?
So the through line for today is our changing taste as we grow older and closer to death. Mm. And I submit to you boys that I watched over the weekend with G-Money, back to back to back, The Phantom Menace, A New Hope, and Empire Strikes Back. And it really hammered home to me that at the time when Phantom Menace came out, I, like many other people, was not in love with it. There were the Jar Jar Binks problems, and there were the Jake Lloyd problems. But
wizard!
I convinced myself, as did the entire country in an episode of Mass Psychosis. They're like, you know what, though? It's pretty good. Very exciting. We got more Star Wars. More Star Wars. Sneep, sneep. I'm going to get my gem dice and my lightsaber and go to the... see it with my... maybe one of the cosplayers will be there with their brass bikini. And it is a absolute disaster of a film from start to finish, at every level, from the level of costuming. I mean, once you are sitting as a dispassionate observer looking at what's going on,
yes,
the costumes are shitty, by which I mean like shittily made. They don't make sense. They look bad. The blocking is terrible. There is a scene in the hangar where some of the Naboo security forces are firing and running around there with their weapons, and they look like limp-wristed, like bad. Careful. No, I mean, like they're holding their guns, they're holding their blasters wrong,
right?
And the extras are doing things. The green screen background stuff, which again at the time was fine, but it never looked good, and now it looks terrible. The plot and pacing, the beats are all... Everything about this movie is terrible, and we didn't realize it at the time. And I don't know... I guess this is the question I put to you guys, right? This is Sunny. There's, you know, as a man of film criticism, the verdict of history in film is a very real thing, right? Movies that people revere on, you know, on release... Sometimes people will tend to turn on over the course of 10 years, right? And sometimes a movie that comes out is not really appreciated for a long time. But the level of mass psychosis surrounding The Phantom Menace is staggering to behold once you watch it back to back with especially New Hope. Because New Hope is... what are we, 48 years, 50 years after New Hope came out? And it's great.
Yeah.
Everything about it is great. And again, it's not just like that there's no Jar Jar. And I understand, yes, Lucas directed the I get it, yes. Lucas directed Phantom Menace. He didn't direct New Hope. But again,
yes,
did Lucas direct New Hope?
Yeah, he did not direct Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi.
Oh, right. I mean, A New Hope is a piece of mature filmmaking. And it succeeds on every single level. It looks like a million. We are 50 years later. It looks amazing.
It looks great.
I mean, it looks so good. Everything is lived in and wonderful. And the only times there are things that don't quite look right on the screen, honestly, it's the stuff that's been added after the fact.
1,000%.
And how did anybody, this is what I want to know. How did anybody look at those two movies in 1999 when Phantom Menace comes out? I think it's 99.
Yes.
And look at them back to back and not go, holy shit, the Emperor has no clothes. This man who once directed a perfect movie has now lost his fucking mind. Instead, we, and I, again, I count myself among them. We're like, yeah, it's, but it's Star Wars. We love the wars and the stars. We love them. It's okay. It's really okay. And it wasn't okay. Michael, it was not okay.
But you're okay, JVL. You're okay. I mean, I don't know. I would like to know Sonny's thoughts on this. I mean, I will just say I was 11 years old.
Okay.
When Phantom Menace came out.
You're off the hook on this one.
But I will say that I distinctly remember going to Attack of the Clones. My brother and I went, maybe I've told this story before. We went to the theater. We were dropped off at the Mall of Georgia, the Regal Cinemas there. We were dropped off and it was like a big deal for me to take my little brother and for the two of us by ourselves to go see a movie together. And we were very excited. We were kind of, you know, what could this possibly be? And even at those ages, I was 14 and my brother was 11 or 12. We like walked out of the theater and we both knew that it was a steaming pile of garbage.
Wow.
And we just kind of like, we were kind of like, let's move on. Let's go get an Annie Ann's. Sonny, what are your thoughts?
I have several thoughts here. First, I have a question for JBL. How did you watch these on the Disney Plus app?
Yes, the Disney Plus app, but on a very large TV.
That's not that irrelevant. Actually, we'll drive home the next point I have to make. Did you notice, because I noticed this when I rewatched them recently, that Star Wars A New Hope is in one of the best 4K transfers I've ever seen. I mean, it looks amazing. It looks sparkling. Yeah. Phantom Menace is very clearly not. And I am curious. I am curious what exactly. So there is a technical reason that this might be the case, which is that the video, essentially, when you're rendering that many special effects in the modern computer, they only render it 2K. They only render it 2K. So putting it out in 4K actually makes all of the not real things look much more not real.
Yeah.
So there is I think there's an actual technical limitation to how good those movies can look in 4K, which is not the case with Star Wars A New Hope. And you know why that movie looks so better is because it's all real. I mean, it's
practical
almost
effects.
The reason the special edition stuff looks so bad is because it's not real, because it's added in via CGI later. But the stuff that's even like the hologram chess pieces, real things made by Phil Tippett and his guys, you know, it's an entirely different art form almost. I mean, it looks so much different. So that's one
thing.
But
Sonny, that's the least of my criticism.
I think that colors everything that you're seeing here.
Stains
A New Hope, so there's a second part of the question that you asked, which is about the verdict of history. And I will tell you that the current verdict of history looks much more kindly upon the prequels now than it did 10 years ago, because we have gotten the sequel trilogy. And the sequel trilogy is so loathed outside of, you know, The Last Jedi has its dead end defenders. But for the most part, the sequel trilogy is so loathed and so hated, and the TV shows are so looked down upon by most people who have two eyeballs and a brain, that the prequel trilogy is now looked at the very least as the work of an artist who had an idea that carried through all three of it meets the very bare minimum for like auteurist coherent storytelling. You have an auteur who is telling a story, in this case about the decline of democracy and the rise of authoritarianism, and it carries through. It's thematically, you know, succinct throughout, more or less. Another just one little thing. You didn't even get to the worst of the series, which is, as Mike correctly diagnosed, as a 14 or 15 year old, as Attack of the Clones, which is just the absolute nadir of Star Wars. Even worse than
Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, yes.
Oh, much worse than Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith is very bad.
Revenge of the Sith is I like Revenge of the Sith a lot. I think it's the third or fourth best War Amongst the Stars. But Revenge of the Sith is much better. But Attack of the Clones is worse even than Rise of Skywalker.
Let me tell you an Attack of the Clones story that demonstrates how everyone knows how terrible it is. So my kids are into the Star Wars movies. They have not seen Revenge of the Sith or the sequel trilogy. But the most they've seen up to is Attack of the Clones. And when I do the youngling, because somebody erased it from the memory part where Obi-Wan is asking them, when I do that voice, my kids like crack up, not because it's a funny voice, but because they recognize how awful that whole sequence is, where like George Lucas is introducing children into Star Wars set aside Anakin, but like, why do we want to see little kids with little dinky little lightsabers? It's so bad. My kids think it's so like ridiculous. So they can identify and they still think Attack of the Clones is cool, but they can see like the seams.
So I want to add one more component to this. So as a child, I did not see New Hope or Empire in the theaters.
Okay.
Those were home video watches for me. But I did see Return of the Jedi in theaters, and I didn't like it. Even as I think I was 12, I didn't like Return of the Jedi. And I was never fully able to put my finger on what it was. But a big part of it for me is that it felt wrong. And the reason it felt wrong was because Han, Leia, and Luke all looked old. And to the like 11 or 12 year old me, that 6 year difference for those like at that point in their lives, young adults, like really appeared on screen. And I went from like, oh, these are like youngish people kind of like me to, ugh, they look old and decrepit.
A lot of that's cocaine. But
except for Carrie Fisher, who, by the way, again, having just watched Return of the Jedi, when she is splayed out on Jabba in that brass bikini, holy shit, it's even sexier than like 12-year-old me thought it was. And 12-year-old me thought it was awfully sexy.
Well, a lot of that is cocaine.
Well, I mean, I remember between Empire and Return of the Jedi, Mark Hamill like broke his face. He got a horrible motorcycle accident.
Wasn't that between New
Star
Hope
Wars and Jedi? Yeah,
it was between Star Wars and
Jedi.
No, and Empire.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, Empire. Because yeah, that's why
the whole abominable snowman attack.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know, man. The broader point about the Phantom Menace itself, I disagree in the sense that I do think it has some good stuff. I basically like all of the stuff with Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson and Darth Maul, like
all of it.
Yeah,
I like the
midichlorians. I like explaining how the Force works. I like.
There is exactly one thing to like about this movie, and it is the idea, the tragic idea that Qui-Gon Jinn is hell-bent on taking this kid in, and everybody around him thinks it's a bad idea, including Obi-Wan, and that Qui-Gon, because he's gotten his stupid ass killed and has made Obi-Wan promise to keep bringing him up, that Obi-Wan, who doesn't think it's a good idea, decides to mentor the guy who's going to wind up bringing the galaxy to its knees. That is an interesting idea. Unfortunately, it also directly undercuts from A New Hope when Obi-Wan is talking to Luke and makes it seem like Well, it also makes it seem that, like, you know, he believed that Anakin was going to be, you know, a great thing. And we're like, no, it said right there in that other movie that he did not think. And that was what was interesting about that movie. Anyway, that's like stupid canon debating, but it's bad. It's a bad movie, Sonny.
It's the difference between a young, hungry filmmaker who has to prove something. You know, this A New Hope, Star Wars had to be great. And then, like, a filmmaker in his, like, past his prime who's, like, it's going to make money no matter what. And, like, he wants to use it to do his own, you know, crazy political drama, whatever, which, like, that was not what anybody signed up for in the first place.
Well, I mean, and the series doesn't really, I still don't think the series goes off its rails entirely until Attack of the Clones, because Attack of the Clones is where, like, nothing is real. Like, none of the sets are, it all looks entirely fake throughout. All the shadows are wrong. All of the, like, walking and talking is wrong. I don't know. I give Phantom Menace probably more of a pass than you do, but I would still say, I mean, it's not, I would not describe it as a good movie per se.
But people liked it when it came out.
Well, of course they did, because there's 15 years of anticipation built up to that. I mean, it's like the entire reason people were excited for it is because there wasn't any Star Wars for 15 years aside from droids, cartoons, and Ewoks.
The Ewoks.
It's like a dude who's been in prison for 15 years, and he gets out and he sees this horribly ugly girl at a bar, and then the first night and he takes her home, he's just like, oh, I think this is the greatest thing ever. And then, like, a week later, after he's seen more than one woman in over the course of 15 years, he's like, I can't believe I fucked that ugly chick. That's what it is.
Sonny, what's going on with you?
Not a whole lot. not a whole lot. I'm concerned about I'm concerned about my wife, who has been radicalized by the internet. I never used to really believe that internet radicalization was a real thing. I always thought it was an excuse people would use, like, oh, I watched some ISIS videos, now I want to cut people's heads off. But I don't know. I'm getting to the point where I'm a little worried about it, because the algorithm has been on Instagram, the algorithm, the almighty algorithm, has been feeding my wife an endless stream of Halloween decoration videos. And every day she's just buying more and more of them. And she's always been more into the holidays than I have. I'm a bit of a Grinch. I don't really like Christmas.
What?
I don't like Halloween. I like Thanksgiving, but I like the act of Thanksgiving. I like the act of eating lots of food and watching football.
The act of giving thanks. Right. And with Christmas, you're focused on the birth of Jesus. Like, you don't like all the pageantry and commercialization.
I like the commercialization, but I like it to be contained to one day. I just want that. I just want all the presents, and that's it. I think it's a real problem we have to think about as a society.
What is she getting?
How to stop?
Tell us about the decoration.
Is it the 12-foot tall skeleton, like, from Home Depot?
No. I don't think she wants to get one of those, because putting it together would be actually pretty difficult, and she knows I'm not going to have any part of it. But it's definitely, it's like a lot of, like, styrofoam, you know, gravestones, and that's a, you know, spooky trees.
Smoke machines.
And
the eyes that she put on the tree out in front to make the tree look spooky?
I don't know. My concern here, my broader concern here is not really about Halloween. I'll survive having a lot of crap in my front yard during Halloween. I am worried about the state of our civilization, really. The way the algorithm is destroying the basic fabric of, you know, how we behave.
So, question, are Halloween crafts a part of what the algorithm is serving up? Things like, I mean like little decorations that she and the kids can do.
Oh,
together,
yeah, absolutely. Sort of they've thing. Already yeah. started. They've already started doing them. They've already,
already?
They're painting spooky houses and making little felt. Things.
Carving pumpkins?
No, there's no carving. You can't carve pumpkins in Texas, because if you carve a pumpkin now, it'll be moldy in 3 weeks.
Or squirrely.
Or like a week. I mean, it's like it's 105 degrees today. If you put a carved pumpkin out there, and it's going to be.
But it's also sunny. It's September.
It's way too early. It's way too early for any of this.
Costco started rolling out Halloween decorations 3 weeks ago.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, all the stores have done. Halloween creep is the new Christmas creep. In that, I really do think it's, again, this is a societal problem. This isn't about my wife per se. It's about the idea that as a society we have accepted this constant barrage of Halloween and other related holiday nonsense. And it's got to stop. The holiday nonsense has to stop.
I guess you're not going to put the lights up on your house this year for Christmas.
I didn't put them up last year. We hired somebody.
No, that's fine. But you hired somebody to put them up.
If it were up to me, I wouldn't put up Christmas lights. If it were up to me, I wouldn't put up a Christmas tree. I would just have a pile of presents in the corner of the house. Just throw the gifts on the pile, children. We'll sort it out. On Christmas, we'll distribute them then.
Sunny comes down the stairs like at 10 a.m. on Christmas morning, sipping a coffee mug of bourbon. There's Christmas. It's over.
Here's 5 pounds of meat. the best part of the year for me is like between basically January 10th. And I guess September 1 now, because that's when the Halloween season starts. That eight or nine month stretch is the happiest part of the year for me. Because there's not really that many holidays per se. I mean, there, you know, 4th of July, there's Easter or whatever, but those aren't like big decoration.
Don't lie to us. There's no way you're happy for that long a stretch of time, Sonny.
Give me the go live date for this year, 2023, for the first Christmas decoration you see in Costco. I'm going to say September 29.
Yeah. Yeah. I would go with sometime in mid October, because by then they've depleted.
Oh, I'd take the under on that.
You think? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Probably late September, early October. You could probably go buy a Christmas tree right now at Costco. I bet they have the fake trees up already.
Yeah, they're hanging.
I don't go to Costco, thankfully, so you know it's just whatever happens to be up at the Target. That's what I see. All
right, Michael, how are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm fine. I don't want to make this into something where I'm bragging on my kids too much.
We're putting you up to it.
I was very proud this past weekend. My oldest, my almost 9 year old, did his first triathlon. There is a neighborhood triathlon, and all the kids do it. It's very like low key. But they bring in a bunch of sponsors and they have them broken up into groups. So there's the 6 to 8 year olds, the 9 to 11 year olds, and then the 12 to 17 year olds. And, you know, kids do it all the teenagers do it in teams, and they kind of make it a fun thing. And there's breakfast afterward at the pool and all this stuff. And so, this was something that he had never done before, but a bunch of his friends were doing it. And so we signed him up, and you know, the biking, the cycling is great, you know, easy for him to do. The running is, he loves to run. It was the swimming that we were kind of nervous about, which was the first leg of it, 50 meters swimming, a mile on bike, and then half a mile running. And he did it, and he finished it, and it was, you know, I don't know how long it took. It probably took, you know, over 25 minutes or so, for him to do it all, but it was kind of a great little bit of, and all the kids had, you know, that when they finished, they had like this kind of, finish line with a balloon, kind of a balloon arch that they got to run through. They had professional photographers. And so they like every kid got a like three professional photographs of them running or biking or swimming, and then everybody got to, you know, have like blueberry pancakes and other fun stuff after. It was totally great, totally wholesome, and I'm just proud of the guy.
Is 50 meters one like Olympic size pool length? Is that how long 50 meters is?
I think so. This was two laps. Okay. On the size of the pool that they were in. So
So how was he at the finish? Was he like the famous Chris Lee at the finish line of the triathlon, you know, the Ironman triathlon, and was it 96 or 97, where his body started malfunctioning? Remember this?
Oh, yeah.
Famous shots during the Gatorade commercials. He's like getting all herky-jerky. And right.
He's cramping up. And
yeah.
No, none of that. It was he finished. He had a smile on his face. And again, the hardest part was at the beginning. And like once he was through that, then it was easy street. So it was good. He said he wants to do it again next year, but on a team. So maybe he'll only do one leg of it. But it's fun. It's nice. It did strike me, though. It's like, of all the places, maybe these things are common in suburban subdivisions everywhere, but like, if there's a place where like, there would be, over 200 kids to do a neighborhood youth triathlon, it would be in Northern Virginia, like where like half the parents are just like really intense about exercise and all that stuff.
Professional photographers.
Yeah, exactly. It was, so it was a little ridiculous, but it was fun. It was nice. So that's really all that's going on with us. So,
yay, Mazel Tov.
Thanks. Why don't we just move on here? Let's talk about let's talk about the box office real quick, because, and I know, Sonny, we're gonna have to break this up, or which one should we talk about? Because there's the weekend, regular weekend, Friday through Sunday box office, but there's also the Labor Day box office numbers, which are slightly different. What is the appropriate list and numbers to look at from Labor Day?
I think the order is the same on both of them.
It is. The Equalizer 3 at number 1, but it's like a significant difference. I was surprised. It's almost not quite, I guess, what, $8 million more it made on Labor Day. So
it's a holiday weekend. Labor Day has never been a huge box office weekend because it's the end of summer. Kids are back in school, whatever. But this was the second biggest opening on a Labor Day of all time behind Shang-Chi, which came out a couple years ago, 2021, I think. Or was that 20? I don't even remember. Whenever Shang-Chi came out, that was the number one Labor Day box office release. The interesting thing about The Equalizer is how incredibly consistent this franchise is. I saw a tweet from the guys who run the website The Numbers, which is kind of like a Box Office Mojo like site. And the variation between the three Equalizers is like, it was a smaller variation between the opening of 1, 2, and 3 than any other franchise by an enormous margin. Again, I don't know how numbers work, but it was very, very tight pattern. So this movie did well. This is the first legit number one since Barbie came out. I don't think we count Gran Turismo as a legit number one. Box office is back.
Yeah,
it's not gonna make as much money as Taylor Swift is gonna make. You guys follow that story at all?
We have to do that movie, and I know you don't want to, Sonny, but Michael has stories about his time in college with Taylor Swift, the time they were at a party together.
You went to college with Taylor Swift?
No. She showed up. Well, I'll have to tell it on the show.
No, save it.
Yeah,
save
I'll save it for the show.
But also, it's gonna open to like Endgame money.
It's gonna make a lot. No, I am gonna see it, and we can do an episode on it. I ended up getting browbeaten into doing it for Across the Movie Aisle. Apparently it's sexist to think that this is
going
to
be quadrant hit, man. Everybody's going to go see this.
The issue isn't whether or not it's going to be a hit. The issue is whether or not there's going to be anything to talk about. Because let me tell you, I got nothing to say about Taylor Swift. I've listened to the songs. They're fine. She's doing a concert. Oh, she changes her costumes. Great. Look at this. She's on a stage. She's a showman. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck about any of that.
When is this movie coming out, by the way?
October 10th?
No, I think it's the... is it that weekend or is it the weekend after that?
I don't know. I could be wrong.
I think it's the weekend.
Mid-October. And
title is what? Eras Tour?
Yeah. And Michael, I mean, you, again, don't spoil it. But I think you are going to have a lot to say about what Taylor Swift means, because she is the closest thing that the music industry has created to an all-American, sort of, again, all levels, all classes, all ages, consensus hit that people like since, like, Michael Jackson, I think.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it is so, I think at this point it is so female driven, which, you know, is, I don't know how to evaluate that with, because I mean, my understanding is Michael Jackson sort of had broad appeal, right? I mean, it wasn't like,
yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, but maybe women are always the one who drive, like, who are the pop stars of any given moment, but
she's got, like, she's got 20 somethings who grew up with her. She's got parents who have come to her through, I mean, this, again, I'm saying, you know, dads, Dwayne Johnson is a Swiftie, like, it, but this is a monoculture. She is a monoculture, which is what we love, right? We wanted monoculture. And Taylor Swift is broken out of all of the niches in a way which has not happened in American music for a very long time. Sonny looks like he's going to fall asleep.
Yeah. I just don't know what else there is to say about it.
Well, I have
I don't disagree with any of this, but my point is you don't actually need to see the thing to talk about it.
Well, you can just pretend
I don't think
I'm going to go two or three times.
I'm going to go watch
I'll buy enough tickets for you, Sonny.
Here's the problem. The commenters in the comments section of the Across the Movie Aisle podcast are going to, they got a real monkey's paw situation on their hand here. They wanted me to go see it so I can talk about it. I'm not fucking talking about it. So they brought this on themselves. I'm going to get so many angry emails and comments about that episode. I haven't even watched it, but I know I have watched enough Taylor Swift over the years to know exactly what is going to happen. So I don't know, man.
Well, I will say there is one demographic that is really not that into Taylor Swift, and it is the husbands and boyfriends of the millennials, the millennial women who are obsessed with Taylor Swift. Like, I know because I am friends with a number of them, and we chat all the time about how we can't stand how much our wives, my wife excluded, she doesn't really care for Taylor Swift, but like that is, so I feel like I'm in the zone for like not caring about the music element of it. So that's all I'm saying, JBL. But if the show requires me to see it, I will see it. And that's all I have to say about that.
Good.
Well, let's talk about that number one movie at the box office this weekend, The Equalizer 3. Sonny, let's hear that review. All right. Well, I guess we all liked it. And that's all there is to say about that. You can come to subbeacon.com, join us, become a patron, and we will see you next time. I did keep wanting Denzel at various points to just drop a "my man" several times throughout this movie. And
American Gangster, that's another great
it's a
performance.
It's a good movie. I like it. He's fine in it.
It's a good performance.
Good performance.
I don't know. It's an okay movie.
I got a question. I don't know if I should ask it on air or once we stop taping.
Okay.
I'm doing this in honor of our departed friend Victorino.
Ah, okay.
So in the movie, one of the main characters is the local carbonari, Gio, who's a good cop. He's a good cop. He's good police. We see Gio at home with a young girl who appears to be about 7 or 8 years old.
His daughter.
And another girl of very indeterminate age. If you told me she was 15, I would believe it. If you told me she was 25, I would also believe that. And then we see them at dinner. Again, him with the two girls. And it is unclear to me, are they both his daughters?
No, no, that's his wife. No,
that's, or is that's that clearly his wife.
That's clearly his wife. Sure?
She's definitely like late 20s.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about
that. I mean, I don't know what her actual age is.
I think she looks, again, you told me she was 15. I would say, yeah, okay, I see that.
Well,
she's the older sister. The wife died tragically in childbirth when the second one was born. I can understand that backstory totally. He's a widower.
No, but because here's the thing. He's not old enough. He's not old enough to have a 15-year-old daughter. He's
24.
Okay.
So mid-20s.
Yeah, but I knew where you were going with that, JVL. I did have a momentary. I said, wait, who is this? Who is this? And then
the plot thickens.
I'm sure it's fine.